Welcome aboard. I'm Brad.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Scott. Welcome to My Ship Story Podcast.
This is a podcast where we invite crew members, both past and present, to tell their stories about life at sea.
So come up to the pool bar and grab a drink.
Sit back, relax, because it's time for
My Ship Story. God, that was terrible.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's another episode of My Ship Story Podcast. We're back after several months, but we're back in the saddle. Got with me today, Scott and Eric. What's going on, guys? Scott, what's happening in your neck of the woods?
I've had a crazy busy summer of filmmaking and stuff that you guys probably seen online and have a film doing its round in festivals, doing some good stuff off of there and getting ready to start for the world's largest film race coming up. That's going to be a wild and crazy. I almost have to get my sleep in now because you have to make a whole film in 48 hours and we get maybe 45 minutes of sleep.
Shoot a movie, or shoot and edit and everything.
Holy cow. It's real quick. The rundown is go in, you draw at 7 o'clock p.m. You don't even know what genre you get. So you draw and you get a choice of two genres. And you have from that time to Sunday, 7 p.m., to turn in. You have to write, edit, score, film, everything, a movie, not a feature, but like from four to 8 minutes long.
You're going to do a feature in that long.
Yeah, it's still a madhouse. It's nuts. What's funny is people are hopped up on Bang and Monster and whatever energy drinks they can for 48 hours. I mean, the only time you sleep is if you rush to the second location, you get there first, and you can set up your stuff and nap until everybody else gets there. That's it. Yeah,
wow.
We'll see.
Wow, sounds wild. Eric, what about you? What's up?
Well, it has been a while, hasn't it? But yeah. Again, my summer is I had to move out. I'm in a rental house so we can get our house remodeled, and it's a huge project. So it's just been most of my summers doing that. But now I have to get my parents' house ready to sell, and dealing with my parents and trying to get that ready is just a nightmare. But yeah, mostly remodeling, dealing with contractors all summer long. So, yeah.
Guys, if you've been wondering where we're at, what we've been doing, and why we haven't put out an episode in a long, long time, we've just been busy. Well, these guys have been busy.
We've been very busy.
I've just been drunk this whole time. And
it's a really important question.
Just can't get shit together.
Are you drunk now?
No, okay. I'm not 100% sober, but I'm not.
You hesitated there, which makes me worry a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not.
Yeah, let's.
Like my wife says, not entirely sober. We've got a nice guest with us today, coming at us all the way from Australia. Welcome to the podcast, Shane Morris. Welcome, Shane.
How you doing, guys?
Welcome, Shane.
Hi. Hey there, Shane. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for accommodating us. We've tried this several times, and the time difference is kind of a bitch, but we made it work, and we're glad to have you here finally. Tell us a little bit about how you got started working on ships. How did it happen for you?
My name is Shane. This is my ship story. It's actually a pretty weird story. Not weird, but it's a pretty funny story.
Good. We like a weird, funny story.
Weird, funny kind of thing. I was working over here. We got, I guess, what you call a registered community club, and they essentially are a mini casino. So they got slot machines. We call them pokies over here, a bar, a restaurant, and so forth. So I was working as an attendant in one of the rooms. We had about 250 machines, so it wasn't a small type setup. And I'd been there for roughly 3 years, just under 3 years, and had a really good team of friends. And, you know, we're all in our early 20s. So all, when we weren't working, we were, you know, socializing, partying and everything like that. And everyone sort of started sort of breaking away. A few friends started to head overseas to the UK to do their, you know, 2 year backpacking around the UK type thing. And I really wanted to do that. But it was a small problem. You needed $6,000 just to get a visa. I had maybe $600, if that. So I thought, well, I wanted to go overseas, wanted to do something else. And there was an ad in the paper back when they put, you know, jobs in the paper and the newspaper, right? So I sent a resume and an email and everything, and I heard nothing back from it. And this was just the standalone recruiter. She was recruiting for Princess, I found out later on. So this was, what, mid-2003? And then probably about a month or two later, I get this random phone call from her, and she just said, oh, look, I'm really sorry, my computer crashed. I was actually in your city last month doing interviews. I just got my computer working again. I really like your resume. I want to interview you. Are you okay to do one over the phone? And I said, oh, yeah. So I did the interview, and she explained about the whole process and, you know, what ship life's like and everything like that. And she said, oh, so you worked with the machines. And I said, yeah, yeah. She said, have you fixed them before? And I said, oh, yeah. Not knowing that to the degree of being an actual technician on a ship versus being an attendant in the room is completely different. Because over here we have external companies that come out and they've got electrical qualifications, and, you know, they know their stuff, because you can blow yourself up essentially on a machine with 240 volts over here. So I thought just clearing a coin jam or something like that. So I just said yes. And so she went through with it, and she goes, so look, I'm going to refer
real
you.
Quick, do you remember the name of that recruiter?
She was in Melbourne.
So she was Australian.
Okay. Yeah, she was Australian. I think she used to work on the ships, and she probably got out and she was probably doing her own freelancing type thing. I can't remember her name. This was, what, mid-2003. And I remember she sent me a couple of her business cards, and it's probably in storage somewhere in with all my ship stuff that I can't seem to find these days. But she referred it on to Princess, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. She said, all right, you'll hear back soon. So I did get a call back, and they said, oh, look, we need you to go for a US visa. So the US embassy is in Sydney. So we were talking before off air about, you know, going down to Sydney. So I flew down for the day just to go and get my visa in Sydney, you know, sent it all off, sent everything
and
off.
You're around Brisbane. We didn't establish that. We talked about it before, but yeah, you're around Brisbane.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I'm just about an hour south of Brisbane. Yeah, flew down for the day, got the visa, sent it off. So the interview was on the P&O Pacific Sky. And I'm not sure if anyone really remembers that ship, but it held about 1,250 passengers.
Okay, so just so you know the history about me, I was the scheduling manager for Princess Cruises, which included P&O Australia at different times. And I also became the director of recruitment for Princess and P&O Australia and so much. So, like, I know very well what you're talking about, and I do remember Pacific Sky.
So it was, I got to Sydney Harbour for the interview, and I thought it was the biggest thing ever. It was just, in hindsight, after being on the ships that I went on, it was a tugboat. It was literally a dinghy. But I remember getting on there for the interview, and we had to do an exam, and that's when it sort of clicked that this is an actual technical role, not just walking around the room and, you know, keeping people happy and talking to people and, you know, bringing a waiter over and signing for a drink and everything. This was totally fixing machines.
It's like, what's a multimeter? So
what's a circuit board? So I had to sit through this exam, and that, like, it was all multiple choice, and it asked what these error codes and everything were, and I just looked at it. I was like, I was about 22, and I just looked at it, and I went, I
can't get this. A, B, C, D,
yeah. And the manager just comes over, and he goes, see. So he gave me all the answers, lo and behold. So I got 100% in that. So that was the first sort of step towards it all. I really feel for the guys that I've done the first contract with. But anyway, so then we had a one-on-one interview, and he just went through the whole what ship life's like and everything like that. And I said, look, you know, what happens here? And he goes, look, you're in. He said, there's a couple of changes happening with Princess at the moment, so it may be a bit of a delay, which I found out later on it was Carnival sort of merging or taking over Princess. And that sort of delayed the whole thing. I got sent a letter of employment for Princess with the ship being the Golden Princess, but I found out that essentially is just something so that you can get your visa. So I had the visa, and it just was crickets, or what we call crickets, but just absolute silence. But and then on the 19th of November 2003, I remember the day, I got an email saying, you've got to be in Miami, Florida on the 29th of November. So I had 10 days to quit my job.
Oh, that's plenty of time.
That's so long.
Sell my possessions. 10 days is a long time.
Organize a flight. Luckily, I had a very understanding roommate at the time, my older brother, who was quite accommodating with it, and he just met his now wife. So they were kind of at the stage where they weren't living together, but they were close to moving in. Literally went to the closest travel agent and bought the cheapest flight. Then I went to my boss, quit my job, well, gave notice, finished up a week later. So the flight was, just to give you a bit of context, was where I'm living now, the Gold Coast to Sydney. Had 6 hours in Sydney to Auckland to LA, 8 hours in LA, LA to Phoenix, 1 hour in Phoenix.
What?
Phoenix to Miami.
Wait, Phoenix.
Cheapest flight.
Yeah, but even Phoenix, then, why stop in Auckland? Like, you know, they're direct flights from Sydney to LA.
Cheapest flight. That's all I could say. I did that
when I came back. When I came back from Australia, we went from Sydney to Auckland. And Auckland to LA.
Yeah.
Auckland to Hawaii and Hawaii to LA.
See, that would have been better. I just went straight to LA.
It wasn't bad. We had a lot of cocktails in Hawaii. So it was,
as you do.
All right. We flew Samoan Airlines.
All right.
Yeah. Samoan.
Okay.
Was that a company paid flight? So they got the cheapest one they could find?
No. We did this on our own.
So you got the cheapest one.
We found out later that they stopped those flights because they were only two engine planes, that whatever regulatory required four engines to make that flight. But anyway, sorry to interrupt you. We do this all
the time. You're right.
I think you're in Phoenix.
Yeah, so Phoenix was probably the most rushed, and it was a 1 hour, literally go from one end of the terminal to the other. I don't remember much of it, and it was the first and last time I'd ever been to Phoenix, and I didn't leave the airport. But I'd never been overseas, first time having a passport, and I didn't sleep a wink on the long-haul flight. I was so excited, didn't sleep. So probably the biggest shock was landing in LA. LAX is just the biggest mind-blowing monstrosity of a thing. Landing there, but then like you land, you grab your bag, and then you got to go to another terminal, but there's no one there to tell you how to get to the terminal. I went to then ask the policeman out the front, and he was directing traffic. That's all he was doing, just standing there directing traffic. And he yelled at me for bothering him, so I kind of just made myself scarce. And then there was this guy, I think he was just sort of, you know, shaking people down for money, but he actually gave me directions, so I gave him $5. And then the policeman came up and got at me for giving him money. And I said, well, he gave me the answers I needed to get to the next terminal. You didn't. So got to the next terminal, but then I had to wait so long. I couldn't even check my bags because it was that early. So I found a vacant departure lounge and sort of just curled up on the floor, but I couldn't sleep anyway. Landed in Miami, and it was like maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, so it was really quiet at Miami Airport. And you know how the ships sort of book your hotel accommodation, and, you know, I think it was Holiday Inn or something like that. But then when you land at the departure lounge, there's this big sort of, you know, all these extensions, and you pick up the phone and you call your hotel for the airport pickup. And they said, go to bay, whatever number it was, I can't remember it was. And I got out the front and I could not find this bay. And I asked the janitor at the front, and he pretended to speak Spanish to me, so he couldn't have to talk to me. So, eventually got to the hotel pretty late, and then we had to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, the following morning, to join the ship in.
Why?
Yeah, because we're joining in.
In Fort Lauderdale. Port Canaveral. That's like a 3-hour drive. Why didn't they fly you into Orlando?
Just fly you into Orlando? Yeah,
I don't know. Budget cuts. I'm not sure. It was just.
So you joined. What ship did you join? Your first ship?
Carnival Glory. So at the time, it had just come out. It had just done its crossing. So I was probably the first crew going on where the crossing crew was starting to get off. It was just this giant. I remember trying to take a photo of the ship when we got to the yard, and I couldn't even fit it in the camera. So it was just, after thinking the Pacific Sky was this tiny, this big thing, this is just Yeah, like 3,000 passengers or something like that it holds. So, and it was like,
oh, it was big and new. Sort of, I'm not familiar with the Carnival Glory. It doesn't ring a bell with me, but it was a new
big ship. Yeah, it was a big ship. I guess when you're talking in terms of the Royal Caravan ships now, back then it was a decent size. And I remember getting on, and the duty supervisor that sort of signed me on was another Australian from Tasmania, and still a good mate to this day. So he sort of showed me around, and, you know, had to do all the induction classes, and I still hadn't slept. So I was just falling asleep in all these classes, kept getting sort of the elbow to wake me up. But, and then, yeah, had to did early shift. So in the casino as a technician, it's split into three shifts. So early shift is, you know, open till 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock. Mid shift is say 6 to 12, late shift is 10 p.m. to, you know, whenever they close, basically. So I was on early shift, and then so straight away got introduced to the crew bar, and I hadn't slept that well. I'll just have a couple of these light beers. And I thought they were light. See, over in Australia back then, a light beer was low alcohol. Over in America, it's not. So I had five or six of them, and I was questioning why I was a little buzzed.
I was going to say, how Aussie of you to think you could drink a six-pack before work.
It's just getting started. That was sort of after. And then that whole week, because the first time you get on board, you're kind of still getting used to the rocking and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Finally got through the first week, climbed myself up to my top bunk. My cabin mate downstairs, down the bottom bunk, he was signing off the next morning. So he was obviously out with his friends, catching up with them. And the phone kept ringing because he hadn't dropped his keys back. So the phone just kept ringing, and I'm not answering it. I'm so tired, I'm not answering this thing. So it just kept ringing, and it was the duty supervisor chasing the keys. So I couldn't be bothered even getting the ladder to climb down, that I'll jump down. But it was pitch black. You couldn't see a thing. So I've twisted the ankle and sort of bashed my head on the little nightstand. And I'm like on the ground, just sprawled out, and the phone's still ringing. So I've sort of just reached up and grabbed it, and the manager's like, "Well, where's, I can't remember his name." Anyway, I say, "He's not here." And he goes, "Oh, okay. Oh, well, see ya." And I'm like, "I've just bashed my head." And he goes, "Oh, you'll be right." So I climbed sort of into the bathroom, and I've seen I had a little bit of blood there. So I was just a bit dazed, probably a bit concussed too. So I just sort of grabbed some of the toilet paper and made myself a little bandage because I was so tired.
That sounds like a very Brad thing to do. Yeah. Brad is very familiar with getting a bump on his head.
Well, I figured it, you know, blood eventually clots, so I'll be right. And woke up next morning, felt fine, but my ankle was just puffed up. So I was on light duties for the next 2 days. My cabin steward came in that day to obviously do the, you know, changeover, and he saw all the blood and he thought someone had died. He's like, you know, with this big screech, because I'm like hopping down the gangway, and I could hear him sort of screak, and I'm like, "No, I'm still here, I'm all right." He goes, what happened, man?" He was from Haiti, really cool guy. Yeah, he's like, "You need to go to the doctor." So yeah, he kind of sort of helped me to the doctor, which is a really nice guy. And yeah, I think it was like 3 or 4 days pretty much on light duties. I couldn't really walk properly. But lo and behold, I was back to work, and that was my first week on the Carnival Glory. So,
well, that was pretty eventful.
Hey, Shane.
But yeah, I did.
Before we get into your ship story, I have a question for you. So, when you got on the ship and started working as a slot tech, did you come up against situations where you're like, "I have no idea what's wrong with this machine," or had you learned enough by that time that you could pretty much suss it out?
It's like the first one I came up to.
I learned earlier on that obviously the staff I work, the other technicians I work with, were very technical, very good, and essentially they were, you know, from sort of that Eastern Bloc or, you know, the Philippines and places like that. So English wasn't sort of the first language, and some were very introverted, so they didn't like talking to passengers and stuff like that, but they were really, really good at fixing things. So we obviously, you know, as technicians, we were on a separate tipping pool to the dealers. So I thought, well, if I can't fix things, I can get the tips. So I kind of just spruced that. And any major calls, I would just call another technician and I would circle the room and you know, butter up people and try and get tips that way. So at least I'm contributing in a way. They did try and teach me a few things and you know, like soldering a circuit board and stuff. But that was usually after a night at the crew bar and your hands are shaking like anything. Most of the time fixing a machine, you could just turn it off and then leave it off and turn it on back on. It kind of fixes itself. Like it's a bit like the old control or delete on a computer. So that would always be my go-to. I'd walk up looking in front of a passenger, looking like I knew what I was doing. And I'd be like, it just needs a break.
Wrap it on the side.
Well, that was the next go-to, but just turn it off first and turn it back on.
So technical.
Come back on. Normally it would fix itself, unless it was, you know, back then we had nickel slots, quarter slots and everything like that. So the nickel slots were tiny and they would clog up the hoppers so much. Like I think I went through about four screwdrivers just trying to unjam hoppers because they were sort of the hardest thing. But I was good with the mechanical stuff, but just the electronics, I was absolutely wrong. Rubbish at, and I didn't really get much better. Towards the end of my tenure in 2006, we were doing the software setups for the cashless sort of gaming. So I kind of knew at that time that my days were numbered. they weren't really going to need me much longer. So that and a few other sort of factors, I kind of decided to finish up then. And I'd seen what I wanted to see, essentially. And I had an amazing time. So, you know, why not finish up? Go out on a high, right?
So how many shifts did you end up working?
Look, I only worked the three. So I did three contracts, but I had a bit of a break in between the second and third. So I did Carnival Glory, Diamond Princess, and last contract was on the Caribbean Princess out of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of East and West Caribbean. On the Diamond, obviously, we did Inside Passage 7 days, and then we relocated down to LA and we did the Mexican Riv, which was probably the busiest time because they were all short boards. Like, was it Cabo San Lucas was like a 2:30 departure.
Yeah.
So that was barely enough time to sort of get off and enjoy Mazatlan. And
it was a tender port. Yeah.
Yes.
And Cabo was a tender port. So you really didn't have, as a crew member, really much time to get off there.
Hey, do you have another story for us?
Got a good one. This actually happened on my last contract on the Caribbean Princess. So my last contract on the Caribbean Princess, we were doing East and West Caribbean, and we, on the West, we were doing Costa Maya as one of the ports, and they swapped it out for Osorios. Is that how you pronounce it? Jamaica?
Yeah.
So they swapped it out for
Osorios.
Yep, they swapped it out for Osorios. So
Costa Maya, where's Costa Maya?
That's near Cancun.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. Okay.
It was, you get sort of where the ship stops, there's this whole pool area, and it's really cool sort of little area. But so we relocated and we stopped at sort of Jamaica there. And I think the morning of, they slid this little thing under everyone's door, little notice saying, you know, don't smoke weed. You know, it was worded basically, you're getting off in Jamaica, you know, you will be drug tested, you know, you will, so people will try and sell you things and everything like that. So I've actually got the notice somewhere. I've still got it. We got off there, and the following week was a massive crew party. It was the night before St. Thomas, and it was a crew party. Just I knew I wasn't getting up in St. Thomas the following day, so because I had Port Manning, so it didn't really worry me. So I went to town, had, you know, a massive night, and at the time I had my own cabin. I was in between sort of cabin mates, so ended up, you know, long story short, got back, had company in the cabin, fell asleep, whatever, had this knocking on the door. Obviously I've been randomly selected for a drug test, and I was just not in any state. I'm not answering it. I hadn't smoked weed the week before or anything like that, but I was just like, I'm not answering this. I've got a massive headache. I don't feel well. Probably only had about 10 minutes sleep. So I just kept ignoring it. They probably could have got a key and come in, but they just kept banging on the door. And eventually person was in the cabin with me. She opened the door and let me in. And he goes, look, Shane, you got to go up to a drug test. Up to the and it was done up in the sort of crew rec room next to the crew bar there. And so I've got up there, and the room was just I felt claustrophobic. I had started getting a few, you know, dizzying spells and everything like that. And I got given a number. It was like number 350 or something like that. So wow. I was going to be there for a while. Wow. And just didn't feel well. And look, realistically, there were people coming after me, but it was such a long wait and people were just waiting there. A few people I saw from the crew party the night before, they weren't looking so great either. There was nowhere to sit. So I'm kind of just standing and I started sort of rocking and I just fainted elbow first on the big, you know, those marble tables they had in the crew bar on the princess ship. So the big heavy ones. So elbow first onto that, bash the elbow and on the ground, made this big interruption. Everyone sort of looked. I had friends come over. One was pouring a bottle of water on my head. You okay? You okay? And I'm like on the ground, elbows thumping, head stumping, and I wasn't in any state, not whatsoever. They called the infirmary, so I've got wheeled out on a wheelchair down to the infirmary. They put me in the bed, and they brought me breakfast in bed, and hooked me up to an IV drip.
That's a way to play it, right there.
Doctors come in. Yeah. The doctors come in. He goes, oh, so, you know, what happened? And, you know, are you okay? And I said, look, you guys had a crew party last night and I had in Port Manning. He goes, did you eat anything yesterday? And I went, no, I didn't. Forgot. It was a busy sea day. And yeah, so I didn't eat anything the whole day, which probably didn't help things. So, you know, after, you know, I had some food in me, had the IV drip in me, I actually felt really good. And so he goes, look, you know, you have to go up for the drug test. You won't get out of the drug test here. And I said, well, I've got nothing to hide. So walked into the room. I could hear silence as soon as I walked in the room. Everyone's looked at me and they've just ushered me straight through to do the drug test, done the drug test, and they walked out. The room's gone silent again. I've just said, all right, good night, guys. I'm going back to bed. Put myself to bed, and that was it.
That nice. What a way to get to the front of the line.
Every contract. Yeah, yes. I know. That was a good way. But, yeah, everyone probably thought I was trying to get out of the drug test. But, yeah, it was a massive night. And like any of the crew parties, they kind of just take on a life of their own. Went to bed that day and then got back to work, and everyone was asking me questions. Oh, you know, did you try and get out? I said, look, I had to do the test anyway, guys. I'm not going to, you know, I wasn't going to get out of it. I mean, realistically, you could have got up any port in the Caribbean and got drugs anyway. So I don't know why they put a big emphasis on Jamaica, essentially.
Yeah, I don't know why, but they do. Princess, because I remember my boss used to, you know, run those random, because it was random. They just picked names. I don't know how they chose, but they just picked names from the crew list. And it was supposed to be random. One of the funny things that happened was that my boss's son, who was a purser on board, and he was the equivalent of what you guys would know as a first purser. He was like a senior assistant purser on Princess. He failed the drug test. Results came back, and my boss, who worked shoreside, who everybody on board knew, because we were like, you know, we were HR. So, you know, the onboard crew knew my boss, and his son failed the drug test. So I think he was taken off for a short while, and eventually they put him back on board. But it was just like, his dad was furious. He was like...
And what a waste of time and resources and just putting everyone through a bunch of unnecessary bullshit. Mm. I mean, that's just crap. That's not the best way to treat people.
Before we joined Royal,
we had to do a blood workup and everything.
I did the wrong one on my first contract. I went to just my local doctor, and he's like, "Oh, you don't need all these." I said, "Yeah, I actually do." So he sent me for but apparently I had the wrong one. So when I got to the Glory, they said, "You've got it out of some medical clinic in Mexico." I can't remember what port it was in Mexico, but one of them. And I had to have this whole workup test in some little medical clinic in Mexico. But yeah, I know they did have them, and I don't think you needed them for every contract. I think it was just when you get
usually
started,
it was once. Yeah, usually it's just once every 2 years you have to do a new medical.
Okay.
Usually.
Yeah.
It depends on the company, but generally speaking, once every couple of years.
Hey, Shane, real quick, let me get my favorite questions in here. So, in your three ships or your time and stuff, did you ever hook up with any passengers?
No, I didn't. Had a couple offers, you know, early 20s, Australian accent. It was, you know, it wasn't unusual, but yeah, look, it wasn't worth having to pay my own flight home when I'd flown all that way.
Now, the second part of that, on your dating life, when you're on ships, where would you say the craziest place that you did it on a ship?
It's pretty boring, to be honest. Kind of just kept it to the cabin. I know that you probably want a better answer, but yeah, look, it was, I sort of met someone, you know, halfway through the contract, and we kind of just dated, so didn't really get into any sort of deviant activities there. But then on Princess, there was that, I guess, emphasis on us being watched by other departments. So, you know, every manager said, look, you know, they're waiting on you to slip up, so don't slip up. So it was kind of that. I kind of just sort of, you know, kept it, you know, clean as possible, really. Yeah, well, even my last contract, I remember we had like a massive farewell thing. And a guy I was signing off with the same night was from the Czech Republic, and he had some absinthe from his home country there, the good stuff. And so we got stuck into that. And by the time, obviously, we got off to, you know, go through immigration and everything like that, and I got to Miami Airport to obviously go home, and they cancelled my flight to LA. So I was lined up just waiting to obviously book an alternate flight, but the line wasn't moving. So I kind of ducked off. Not sure if they still have it in Miami Airport, but they had a margarita bar there. So I went and grabbed myself a lime, frosted lime margarita, just to try and cool down and hydrate a little bit.
Now, last question I have before we go. What would be the best and worst port that you went to?
Best port? I used to like St. Martin, just getting off there, sort of walking down, just that clear blue water. You got the steel pan music in the background. You got, especially on the Dutch side, the beers were like a dollar. So, it didn't break the bank sort of going there. Yeah, and the vibe, I just liked the vibe there. It was really cool. Traffic was a nightmare if you wanted to go anywhere else on the island. But yeah, St. Martin was probably my pick. Probably my worst port would have been Belize.
Huh.
It's
never been there.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it's a beautiful snorkeling reef, but getting off in Belize City wasn't that nice. I remember I had to get off. Normally we wouldn't get off in Belize, but because where the ship would dock, it was kind of a dead spot for the satellites, so you couldn't even get internet there. But I had to get off and make a call home because I had to check in on a family member. So I got off and I had to get this phone card. It cost me like $20, and I got 8.5 minutes to call home. And I remember being in the phone box just checking over my shoulder. I was probably in a pretty bad part of town, but yeah, Belize would probably be the one I wouldn't even bother getting off the ship with.
That's a new one. And none of us have been to Belize.
I don't think a lot of ships go there all that much.
I don't
probably
remember really.
Wouldn't go there that much now.
We're about out of time, but it sounds like that you pretty much had a good time on ships. Do you feel
absolutely
like go back and do it again if you had the chance?
Honestly, don't think
not
I
now
would have the energy.
Not now. Not now, but
in your 20s again.
Yeah, wouldn't regret it one bit. I recommend to anyone that, you know, wanted to do a bit of travel and experience a little bit and experience other cultures, definitely, you know, it's a good way of traveling and getting paid for it. So yeah, absolutely.
Now, do you think in your ship life and everything that you've done, do you think that has played a role in who you are as a person or employee or anything today in your business?
Yeah, I believe so. I think I had always had good sort of work ethics and stuff like that, but it just gave me a better perspective on, you know, being able to adapt and overcome and just work with what you've got, because that's essentially what you're doing on board. You don't all have everything together, but you just work with what you got. So if a staff member's sick, you kind of just cover. It's the same as sort of in work life. But yeah, I think so. I think it's made me sort of better and I guess a bit more understanding as well. One thing I probably wasn't aware of when I first got on board, that, you know, people didn't come on the ships, or not everyone came on the ships just to party and experience like I did. Some people were supporting families from, you know, from home. They were supporting extended family. So you had to be a lot more understanding of that as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of that. People are there working really hard because they're trying to send money home.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, once you get past that, yeah. So, yeah.
Is there anything else you want to leave us with before we let you go?
Not really, no. Life's good now. Me and my partner, we are 36 weeks pregnant tomorrow, so the countdown's on. Yeah,
congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We're very excited. My partner's probably a little bit over it at this stage, but it could be worse. It could be in the middle of summer and she could be heavily pregnant. So, you know, life's not all that bad.
And this is your first?
Yes, first baby. Wow. We've been together for about 4.5 years and, yeah, we've been trying for a bit and we go down the IVF route, but we've got a little baby in there kicking around and we're very excited.
Thanks so much, Shane. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much for your patience in all of this rescheduling and scheduling and rescheduling and stuff that we had to do and me getting the wrong day. You know, I just to schedule for a Saturday and you on a Sunday, you know, it blows my mind a little bit, but we finally got it.
Thank you so much, guys. It was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Ciao.
Take care.
Ciao.
Bye-bye. See ya.
Be good. Bye. See ya.
Awesome, man. That was fun.
Oh, yeah. He is such a nice guy.
He is such a nice guy. I guarantee you, I have to know, because he worked for Princess, a couple of contracts. I'm sure I know somebody we have in common, but I had only been working there. I started working there in the year 2000, so just a few years before he started. But yeah, it was, you know, and it's fun to get back on the horse and do this again, because it's been a long, long time. It feels like it's been forever.
Because it has been forever.
Let's start booking for season 5.
Yeah. Hey everyone, the ship is about to set sail, which brings us to an end for today. We hope that you enjoy the podcast. For bonus audio, and if you would like to see this podcast in video, please visit our YouTube channel, My Ship Story. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram as My Ship Story. Don't forget to let us know if you're a past or present crew member, and if you have a story that you would like to tell, or if you like, you can email us your story for us to read on the air. Email us at myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. That's myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. Goodbye for now, and be sure to tune in next week, same time, as we'll have a new podcast every Monday. Bon voyage!